We'll be reading from Luke 12, verse 22 through 34. That's found on page 1090 in the Pew Bibles. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. How much more valuable you than the birds? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the lilies grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not let your heart and do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also."
We've been talking about this theme of what our hearts treasure and cherish and love and desire, because that's at the center of what Jesus teaches us about our relationship with money. He's asking us all, what do you treasure? What do you value most? What's most important to you, and what's most important that you get more and more of? Some people have asked me in the course of this, why haven't we talked about budgeting yet? And of course, that's the first thing we think about, right? When someone says, what's God's will for money? A lot of teachers and pastors start by budgeting and putting your expenses on this side and your income on this side, and making sure that you don't live beyond your means. And I think that's good wisdom. We all need to do that. We can't walk around with the lie that we can consume and spend more than we earn. But I don't think that's where Jesus starts. He starts at the heart. He starts with what is your heart after? And I think the budgeting would be an application. But you see, even a pagan, even someone who worships a foreign god, can budget in a way that he or she lives within his means. That's not a distinctly Christian piece of wisdom. That's something that's just true about everybody. But I do think that when Christ gets a hold of your heart, and you don't treasure the things of this world in an ultimate sense, it's a lot easier to let these things go that we would otherwise cling to. Now, last week, we read in the passage just before this one, in Luke 12, 13 through 21, about foolish investment, a foolish barn building, and investing your money in your commodities so they can just kind of pay off, and you can live off of them, and you can be lazy, you don't have to do any work, without any regards to how that might be impacting anybody else. And I alluded to the fact that it's possible for the older generation to be tempted to do this with retirement. It's possible to say, I'm going to put all this money away and then I'll have to worry about anything. I'm just going to live and I don't have to serve. I don't have to think about anyone else. I think about me. And I had an interesting conversation about that this past week as well. But I think it would be unfair to say that all the generations have different temptations about money, right? So I think when you're older and you are nearing retirement, your temptation is to say, well, I've put in my time, I've worked really, really hard for all these years. I deserve it better than I had it when I was working. The world owes me this thing, and the thing that makes people in that stage of life really, really upset is when things cost a lot, when they cost more than you'd think. I've been married to someone who's been worked in medical clinics for years, and it's the elderly people that give her the most grief about how much this medicine costs. Well, I have to pay that for my doctor visit? Even when it's cheaper than what most people are going for, it's still too much, and they're still angry, and they yell, and they kick and scream. But the younger generation, I think we're looking ahead at life, and we're tempted not to say, why doesn't my money go farther? Why are things expensive? But can I have these things all on credit? Can I work really hard? I know I'm going to work hard for a long, long time. Can I have now what my parents had after working for 20 years for it? Right? The older generation is worried about their money not going far enough and things costing a lot. The younger generation's temptation is to buy everything and pay for it later. And we see this in our world with the credit card epidemic, with people borrowing beyond what they can pay back. And I think both extremes, both are temptations that show our heart is not treasuring Christ more than what we can afford or what we have to pay, what we can get away with on credit, or what we think the world owes us after we've worked decades. Both of us are tempted in various ways. To love money, to let that have a hold of our lives in a way that dictates our emotions and our behaviors in ways that aren't Christ-like at all. And so Jesus here once again goes at the heart of all of this. He says, why worry? He says, God provides, and he calls us to seek after the kingdom which has been given to us, a gift. In other words, the best thing in life is actually free. It didn't cost you anything, but it cost Christ everything. And so we want to look at this passage as parallels the passage that you could find in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. Jesus says to his disciples, you know, since what he said before, that you can't, You can't store up things for yourself and not be rich towards God and be in the kingdom, since this is a problem if you focus all of your investments on what you can get now and here and you don't have any sense of what you're investing in God's behalf for the future. Jesus says, I don't want you to worry about your life, what you eat, what you drink, about what you wear, about what you do, how you ornament and clothe your body, or because life, at its core, life is more than those things. Jesus says, why worry? Well, we have all kinds of reasons we might worry, right? People worry about their finances because maybe they have made some pretty bad decisions. Maybe you find yourself with a mound of debt and you're worried about it. How did I get myself into this? I got to pay all this off now. I can relate to that worry personally. I don't think that since I'm a pastor, I've made all perfect financial decisions in my life. Going off to seminary was a good decision, but in the midst of it, didn't make all the best financial choices in the process. And so now here we've been paying off debts. I know what it's like to feel that that's over you and as a cloud following you around. But Jesus says, how is worrying about that helpful in that situation? See, worrying tends to either do one of two things. Either it makes us really, really frantic and we just go, or it paralyzes us and we can't do what we need to do. We either overwork and overachieve and overfunction to the point where we're probably not even working 6 days and resting a seventh. How many people retire and then go on a vacation for a long time because they actually haven't even rested while they were working for the decades they were working? Worrying causes you to just go full tilt, thinking that it's all up to you, God won't provide, and you can't ever rest in His grace. You can't ever rest in His gifts. You can't ever enjoy what He has given you and what you have. You're constantly focusing on what you don't have yet, what you need to get. So you might worry about a big debt. You might worry that your investment portfolio, your retirement account, is not going in the right direction. I remember at the turn of the millennium, my grandfather Westra had a whole lot of his retirement bound up in the technology market, and that just collapsed. And he went back to work. And it bothered him. But he didn't worry about it. It didn't define his life, but it was a change in his plans. And I could see how it would get under your skin and cause you to go in this frantic worry. Everything that I'd planned for, everything that I'd figured out, it's not working out the way I need to. I need to make sure I got a steady income again to supplement what I'm not going to get from my retirement account. How does worrying play out in your life? You worry about making ends meet. Are you living paycheck to paycheck? You don't have a few thousand dollars saved away to be that buffer in case an emergency happens? Are you worrying about the health insurance plan changing at your workplace? Now it's going to cost more. We're told to worry about a lot of things. Our advertisers want us to worry, so we will buy their products and solutions. Portfolios and schemes to say, here's how you can alleviate your worry. How does Jesus say that we need to deal with our worry? He kind of throws it out there. I don't like to compare Jesus with anybody who is less than him. Jesus kind of does this thing. He kind of invites us to kind of share what we're worrying about with him. And then he asks us, how's that working out for you? Is that helping you or not? And we're honest, but we'll say, no, it doesn't. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? In fact, all the medical studies now say that worrying takes very many hours from your life. The more anxiety that you hold in your body, the more your blood pressure is over-functioning, and your mind and your muscles and your heart and your digestive system are all tense, and it shortens your life. It shortens your life. Those who have a kind of an easygoing attitude are the ones that live longer. You can't control this, though. So since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about everything else? Jesus asks. Jesus' solution to worry is not, well, make sure you're 100% financially stable. It's not get a different job that will provide a little bit more. Jesus' solution to worry is not a technical, temporary solution. Here's what Jesus says in light of your worry. I want you to stop, and I want you to notice things around you. That's one thing we don't do when we're worrying. Stop and take a look at the world around you. Look out the window. Everything's covered in snow now, but you know, if it was springtime, Jesus would say, look at the flowers. Look at the birds. I want you to pay attention to the things you step on and walk over and don't even think anything of it and think that God's providing life in His creation. We're not even noticing. Look at the lilies and how they grow. Have you ever looked closely at the intricacy and beauty of a flower with its layers and colors and fragrances? If this is how God puts clothes on the field, which you cut for hay and feed to your cattle, He's going to provide for you. If God provides for these squawking birds that kind of annoy you, but hey, they have food. They make nests. They take each day at a time. God's providing for them. He's going to provide much more for you who can use your voice to glorify and praise Him, who can plan ahead, who can budget, who can see things out. God's solution to worrying is take a look at the world around you, and when you stop and you look, you'll see that God's hand is providing. And I think, friends, I think we need artists today that can help us stop and look at the world around us through the gift of poetry and language that kind of shocks us and makes us wonder and awe. Through music like the songs we sing here that fill our hearts with joy and wonder. Through those who paint and sculpt that kind of reveal the intricacies of things in nature and the things around us. When you're worrying, you need to stop. You need to pay attention to some things that you've been ignoring for years. And see that God is at work providing for things that you're ignoring that you haven't even thought about in a while. God's going to provide for you too. And so don't put your heart, don't let, what am I going to eat? What am I going to drink? What am I going to wear? Don't let those questions rule your life. You can be in charge of those questions, but those questions shouldn't be in charge of you. Because that's what the pagan world runs after. And the pagan world doesn't know that they have a heavenly Father that knows that you need them and provides for them. This is why Jesus says, seek first His kingdom and His righteousness. So up to this point, maybe it sounds like Jesus is saying that our problem is worrying, our sin is worrying, and we can solve it ourselves, all by ourselves, by paying attention to the world around us. And that's not quite true, because Jesus says one more thing here. And it's verse 32. If you're worried about, am I worried about not worrying enough? Am I anxious about being able to notice these beautiful things around me so I can kind of put worry to bed? Is it all up to me? Is it all up to my performance? Verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. In the midst of our anxiety, in the midst of wondering how we're going to make ends meet, how we're going to afford the treatment that we need to deal with, or send our kids to school, the school we want to send them to, or whatever's on your mind about money. Jesus says, the thing I want you to seek after most is the very thing I'm giving to you for free. Seek first His kingdom, because the Father, the Heavenly Father, is pleased to give it to you. Take His gift, His sheer gift, His merciful gift, His gift that Jesus paid for with His own blood, with His own life, to give to you. You're a part of God's family. You're a part of God's kingdom, His rule, His domain and dominion and reign. Things, the realm on earth where people are following Him and obeying Him, that's the kingdom, and He wants you to be part of it. If you've messed up your money before, He wants to give you His kingdom. If you've staked all of your life on a investment account and it's not working out for you and you see the greed in your own heart, Jesus says the Father wants to give you His kingdom. And when you give this gift, you're able to give gifts back. You're able to be generous and not worrisome. You're able to share with the poor. Even if some of them that you share with might squander some of those gifts. You're like, ugh. I remember when we gave a gift card to someone who was dealing with poverty in our own community, and I took the person grocery shopping at the discount food store, and this person just like threw stuff in the cart. And I'm like, oh, no planning, no thinking about how to make a meal of this thing. But you know what? We were feeding this person, and this was a small step, and I pray it continues to be bigger steps as we could coach and counsel people like this in our community. Hey, next time, try this. Building relationships with people that are in need. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted. The gift of the kingdom changes our hearts and enables us to give that kingdom gift to others. And nothing demonstrates generosity and love and care more than meeting someone else in the midst of their worry, in the midst of their frantic, where's the next meal going to come from? How am I going to provide? Being the means that God provides, being the answer to someone else's prayer. That's what we can do when we've received kingdom gifts, is we can give kingdom gifts. And those investments, Jesus says, are investments in heaven. They're investments in the future. They're investments in eternity. These brothers and sisters are treasures that we're storing up. Now I know what we treasure is gonna show itself through in our checkbook ledgers, in our bank statements. But I think there's a flip side to this, and that is where we put our money is also where our heart tends to go. I mean, the adage of our contemporary world is follow your heart, follow your heart. You hear this all the time, follow your heart. The question that God asks is, what is your heart following? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You could see this as one of two ways. You could see that, of course, looking at that checkbook reveals where your treasure is, but you could also say, you know what, I'm going to give to this cause. I'm going to support this missionary. I'm going to support the benevolence fund in this way. And when you put some of your money there, often your heart follows. If you find yourself kind of oblivious, kind of ho-hum, don't really care about the things that go on in the church, about the things the missionaries are doing, the things that ministries are doing in this community. It might be because you haven't invested much in them. You know, if you purchase a stock or you give money to someone to go on a mission trip, you're going to follow that. You're going to follow up on that. You're going to wonder how that went and how your money is impacting people. How is it growing? How is it producing fruit? So on the one hand, our treasure is revealed by our giving. But on the other hand, our treasure is shaped by our giving. So when you think about your budgets, whatever place you are in life, whatever your challenges are, whatever your worries are, budget some things that you want your heart to go after. Put something in your budget to support a ministry, to support something in this church, and your heart will follow. Yes, our treasure shapes our pocketbooks, but also the way we use our money is a spiritual discipline that shapes our hearts. So that's my call. I believe that's Jesus' call to us all as we think about our money, as we think about what we plan to use our money for. Where our treasure is, there your heart will be also.